नमस्ते, वेलकम एवरीवन. ग्रेट जॉय टू सी ऑल ऑफ अस हियर. इट्स ऑलवेज अ ग्रेट गिफ्ट एंड ऑनर टू इंट्रोड्यूस गौतम सचदेवा. देयर सो मच आई वांट टू से अबाउट हिम, बट आई कीप इट वेरी शॉर्ट बिकॉज आई एम श्योर वी आर हियर टू लिसन टू हिम. ही स्पीक्स अबाउट हाउ पीस इन आर डेली लाइफ इज पॉसिबल इन द हियर एंड नाउ. एंड ही इज बीन अ टीचर ऑफ Teacher and follower of the Advaitic line, non-dualistic path. Among his many teachers has been Ramesh Valsekar, whose teacher is Nisargadatta Maharaj. And I think personally for me, among many others, he's been a huge influence in simplifying life. And I'm grateful for that. And before we start our meeting today, I would just request if everyone can switch off their phones. Because there's a recording and we don't want it to be interfered with. Second, there's some books that Gautam's written, and if you feel called, you can always have a look and get them. So, thank you again, and looking forward to the talk. Thank you.
Will you play some music?
सुखिनः सन्तु सर्वे सन्तु निरामयाः सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखमाप्नुयात् ॐ नमो भगवति माहेश्वरी स्वाहा एतत् पाद्यं श्रीमीरायै नमः
नमस्ते, वेलकम एवरीवन. दिस इज अ ब्रीफ एक्सप्लोरेशन ऑफ अ टॉपिक वेरी क्लोज टू माय हार्ट एंड द लिनियज आई बिलोंग टू. इट इज नॉट थियोरी, इट इज नॉट फिलोसफी. It is a way of living, and a way of being, which can be tested in our own daily living. Very pragmatic, very simple. My teacher would say, beauty in simplicity. And so, the topic which I chose today, death, peace, and true love, and how they are connected to our own lives, essential for peace and equanimity in daily living, because they have all one thing in common. Death is death of the me, peace is death of the me, and true love is death of the me. In daily living, so the first concept here is we are in the realm of duality. The structure of daily living as we all know it is of duality of every conceivable kind. Up and down, black and white, left and right, front and back, rich and poor, pleasure and pain, good and evil, right and wrong, and so on and so forth. We are all in this matrix of duality. One could call it the pairs of opposites. We all know life cannot be only pleasure. In fact, it is mostly pain. That is our experience of daily living. So the first step is to recognize life means duality. We miss this basic understanding of life. When we have it, when pain comes our way, we stop running away from it because we know the design of life is pleasure sometimes, pain sometimes. Now, I have mentioned true love, not love. The opposite of love is hate. Again, we are in the polarities. That love is a conditional love, a love which can change. And true love is that which transcends the polarities. The love of the sages and the masters, transcendental love. So the first step in understanding this is the birth of the ego and how we had nothing to do with it. The ego is not our fault, and therefore we cannot kill the ego. This misconception needs to be resolved. Because when a baby is born, it is pure being. The baby cannot judge, cannot discriminate. It is being looked after by the universe through the mother. Without doing anything, the baby, which we all are right now, as we will see, was looked after by the universe. But at some point, maybe between the age of 1 and 2, a sense of separation developed. The baby realized that if it cries, something comes running to it. In other words, if I do something, something happens. This is the birth of the ego. This is when the sense of separation from pure being steps in. Now I'm a separate center. I'm given a name and I respond to the name. This is the birth of name and form as a separate entity, which was not there at birth. Birth was pure being. Now the ego has developed. And this ego starts taking shape, starts receiving conditioning. If a parent is fearful, fearful conditioning goes into this child ego. Depending on the income group of the parents, geographical location, religion, the bombardment of conditioning starts. And so when this child ego grows up to be you and me, we take decisions and act as if we have free will, without realizing that our decision-making process and our free will is based on our conditioning, which we had no control over, our genetics, which we had no control over, and our inherent nature, which we had no control over. The problem is that when the ego loses sight of this, it feels that its views and opinions are the truth, without realizing that the person in front of us has been conditioned by the same God, but with a different set of conditioning, different income group, different religion, everything different, through which the person in front of us views the world and says things. So we realize that truly there is no right and wrong. There is my view based on what I believe is the right thing to do. The other is equally right. I may or may not agree with their view. That is a different point. But when I realize that the hand of God is behind each and every person I meet, the stranger on the road, my friend, the family member I love, as well as the one I don't get along with, and my colleagues at work, there's a very big shift. Earlier, my relationships were based on blame and condemnation and hatred and malice and judging. Now that drops away. This is a paradigm shift. This understanding, who am I judging actually? An instrument shaped by the same source which shaped me? This is the illusion. This is the Maya, this appearance of separation. Everyone is separate from me. And those who push our buttons the most are our greatest teachers. Because it's too easy to point a finger. Now, when we look at it through this dimension, that they are operating on their blueprint, precisely the way God made them, the battle no longer becomes personal. When my me center, which was so strong and encrusted, starts dissolving, I see the game of life for what it is. And I'm happy to blame others when they push my buttons, but the fact is, my reactions are mine. They are arising in my consciousness. So actually the person pushing my buttons is doing me a very big favor, because they are helping me release what is within me. Things are truly not what they seem to be. And the spiritual journey is to find deep peace through relationships in daily living. Because if we feel that we can practice meditation an hour a day, and the rest of the day we are in conflict without peace and our relationships are a mess, that practice has no value. It stays as a practice, and for the rest of the day I have no peace of mind, and what's even worse is I take away others' peace of mind, which is their God-given birthright. So this teaching says there are three kinds of relationships operating in your life. One is with people, the other is with what happens in your life, events and circumstances, pleasurable or painful, and the third is your relationship with yourself. This is the realm of relationships. If we resolve the issue of relationships, we are out of this game, this very tiring game of being buffeted between two banks of a river. And so when we realize by and by, whoever we meet on life's journey is an instrument through whom God functions, precisely the way God knows best, we find our relationship is now no longer with people but with God. We look at ourselves and we say, oh, we have so many flaws. Who made them? Who was in charge of your conditioning? Were you? No. So I accept what I thought were my flaws are truly not mine. And then I think twice before finding flaws in others. Do I think I know best and better than God? So if I'm obsessed with correcting people, giving them my opinion how they should behave, how they should be, would not that be a form of violence? It's really quite fascinating when we start viewing life this way, because death is very important. We need to learn about death before we die. This death is the death of the ego with its sense of doership, which says, I am the doer and so are you. This is the entire foundation of the Bhagavad Gita. The ego deluded thinks, I am the doer and so are others. If we resolve this in our daily living, it is called in the spiritual traditions to die before you die. Otherwise, we will keep on incarnating into conflict, whether it is external or internal, does not matter. That is why Ramana Maharshi said, the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. He did not say some high self-realization, enlightenment, and so on and so forth is a state of bliss. He said it very simply, the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. If we can live our lives with equanimity, peace and calm, then we are no longer afraid of death. After all, we all know we are not afraid of deep sleep. We look forward to it. At the end of a tiring day, we all look forward to deep sleep. And deep sleep is the death of the me. You don't exist in deep sleep. That is why it is so deep. One's own experience is this. My absence is when I am most at peace. Isn't that a joke? God has given us this gift that when me and my story is set aside, peace is there. So we cannot avoid death. It makes people uncomfortable, this word. But anyone on the spiritual path has to face it. That is why they have been placed on it. If I can die in very small ways, if I can die to my opinion about something, if someone has a contrary view, I say, so be it. I don't have to agree with you, but you are entitled to your view. This is my view. I have died to my opinion. I am no longer identified with it. If I have an object and it breaks, in the moment anger may arise or disappointment. But I tell myself, it was meant to happen. Otherwise it would not have happened. So I am no longer identified with that object anymore. This is what road rage is. If you're driving and someone cuts through you or hits your car, road rage, because I'm identified with this car. It's an extension of me and who I am. How dare someone hit it? I take it as a personal assault. So this me center gets identified with objects and with people. With people, I decide the ones I love will get the most expensive gifts. The ones I don't love, I will pass on gifts that I don't like, which were given to me. This me center does all this. It works in very covert ways, fooling itself. And it loses sight of this fact. This death, which I am avoiding all my life, God or the source or consciousness will keep placing events and people before me till I learn this lesson. My love, as the American mystic Joel Goldsmith would say, it's too easy to pray for your friends and your family. Try praying for your enemies. They too have been made by the same power. He was a reputed healer in the 1950s and 60s, and the tenet of his teaching was, give up the belief in good and evil. Give up the belief in good and evil. Why? Can there be a power apart from God? Because if we feel that evil is a power apart from God, it means there's another source more powerful than God. Yet, we say God is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-pervading. It's a contradiction. When we realize there is only one source, and good and evil are the polaric opposites within that, then we understand the game of duality. This the sage has understood. He may still take an action against what is perceived as evil, but is no longer pointing to an individual doing something. So he becomes more objective. Rather than reacting, he responds, because he is not caught in this trap which we are trapped in. So we find when we understand this design of life, life is no longer me versus the other. My teacher would say, life is simple imprisonment. People would say, you're being pessimistic. He said, not really. Vast, unbound consciousness got limited to this form. through which it lives its life, very brief life, from birth to death. Again, the polaric opposites. It is simple imprisonment. But what the human being has done is it has converted simple imprisonment to rigorous imprisonment and suffers psychologically. And the Buddha said, samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti, but they are not two. The world is a world of suffering. Nirvana is peace, but that peace is to be found through the world and through the suffering. It is not elsewhere. So each interaction in the day is a wake-up call. Each relationship is a wake-up call, because ultimately each relationship is a reflection of my relationship with myself. Imagine going and standing before a mirror, seeing the reflection and pointing faults at the reflection. That's what we do. We are pointing out faults at our own reflection, because the source is one. Imagine if the source was an object and stood before a mirror. Would it point out imperfections at itself? Would it think that the reflection is apart from itself? But that is what we do. That is why it is said in our scriptures, when you stand before the mirror, what do you see? A barking dog will see and hear barking dogs. So this being too quick to judge others is what drops away. When our love is not conditional. And what is that love? A total acceptance of the other. I don't have to hug everyone. I have my own preferences. But when I see this person who has troubled me before, whether it is a lover or a sibling or whoever it is, and that one fine day I just look at this person in totality and tell myself, you could not have done this any other way. I thought you could have, so I was obsessed with correcting you, wishing you to be another way. But now I have seen it, you are acting on your blueprint. And you'll be surprised, with this approach, compassion may arise. Especially if someone is being mean to you, the first thought will be, what must be this person's conditioning? What did they see in their childhood that made them say such mean things and hurtful things? Earlier, this dimension of compassion was not available to us. We were too busy protecting ourselves and defending ourselves. Why? We don't want to die. So we have built wall upon wall upon wall between me and the other, especially the one who triggers me. That one will show you the way to peace of mind. It is about time we realize this, that we will otherwise be building wall upon wall till our last breath, and we will die in the despair of separation. When we accept these kind of people, we all have them in our lives, precisely the way they are, a big turnaround starts happening. It doesn't mean I have to take their nonsense. I can decide objectively what I have to do. All I now know is, when the sense of doership has been pulled out of the equation, I tend to respond and not react. I tend to no longer get stuck in patterns like I used to be. And above all, I now see that God is not just a deity to be worshipped in my altar or just bowing my head down before a master. I now see that I'm constantly bowing my head down between all that there is, because all there is consciousness. I am speaking because I am conscious. You are listening because you are conscious. Without consciousness, I would be dead, you would be dead. So who is speaking and who is listening? Consciousness is speaking through this instrument and listening through that. We lose sight of this. We lose sight of how intimately connected we are. We are all in the realm of consciousness. If you close your eyes and think of the person you love the most and hate the most, both of them are arising in your own consciousness. Both of them are equally close to you. But because we got lost in this realm of time and space and distance, we think things are apart from me. The one I hate is apart from me. It's within your own consciousness. Whom are you fooling? That is why the Indian philosophy of Advaita, Advaita, not two. Every time you think it's two, it's not two. It appears that way. It appears that way. And then when do we wake up from this living dream, which is a dream of the polar opposites? Otherwise, we are trapped. Someone asked my teacher, he died at the age of 92. Sum up your decades of teaching in one sentence for me, just one sentence for me. And his answer was, it's very simple. Love each one in your life as if you created them. Each one. And this is what we lose sight of. If we crack this trinity of death, meaning of true love, and peace, deep peace, unshakable peace, not a peace that comes and goes, so that in my day, my one foot is established in peace as I move around. The peace that passeth understanding. What Jesus said on the cross, not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. All I can do is decide to do a certain thing. Thereafter, it is your will. And the joke is, what I thought was my will is also your will. Because my will is based on factors you created. So when I realize this, that free will has been given to me as a mechanism in daily living. I have to decide, do I go to this restaurant for dinner or this restaurant for dinner? All I can do is decide. Which one I go to, I don't know. One may be closed, the other may not have the dish I want, who knows? So free will, which really made me think I'm the center of my universe, when it is brought down to just mechanics, I live my life by and by quite simply, knowing I use the tool of apparent free will, knowing that God's will prevails. I find if I want to express myself to someone, once is enough. More than that, I don't need to go on and on. Whom am I trying to convince? It is their destiny if they agree with my point of view. So much of garbage which was in my thinking mind is completely burnt to ash. More importantly, I am now available to the person who stands in front of me. Otherwise, I've already judged them. The person has come in front of me and I've already prepared a whole story about them. I don't like this one. What is he wearing? What is he saying? I don't like his voice. That is how the thinking mind is operating. When that is burned to ash, I am pure being, I am pure presence, which is my true nature. I am allowing the other person to be precisely the way God made them. We have forgotten how to do this. An industrialist had come home to one of my talks. Brothers who decided to split the business up because they just didn't get along. And he said one fine day he did something which he would never have done before. He called his brother up and said, look, we don't get along in business, never gotten along, never seen eye to eye, so be it. But can I take you for a cup of tea? He said, I had never done it for 30 years of my life. I now saw my brother for beyond the conflict. That was just one dimension where we don't get along. But we scratch out people from our lives because some upset us about just one thing. That is why my teacher would say, if we agree to disagree without being disagreeable, we find there's so much to honor about everyone. So many people have so many strengths. We focus on the weakness. It's pretty amazing when this whole thing is revealed to us. And then at the end of our lives, when our time is up, our prayer is one of gratitude rather than complaint. A prayer is one where we say, oh Lord, everyone I met in my life taught me something, some aspect of life and living, some dimension I perhaps needed a lesson on. And I saw your hand behind it all. And I thank you, thank you, thank you for this opportunity to live and learn. And when I can live this understanding in daily living, that I am placed on the chessboard of life, which is the game of duality, black and white, two armies on either side, some are pawns, knights, bishops, castles, queens, kings, everyone playing the role they were designed for and moved by higher power. When I can see this in daily living, that all of us at the end of the game are going into the same box, then I know I am living a life of peace and harmony. It is not a peace to be found at a future date. It is the peace of the moment right here, right now. The human birth is very precious. It is a gift. The human being is the only species that is aware that it is aware. The other species are acting on instinct. It is the only species which is allowed to ascend to higher consciousness by the grace of God. And to live this understanding consciously, day by day, event by event, it means I have solved this riddle of death, peace, and true love. And I find when I am more and more at peace, peace with what is and peace with people, I become a beacon of peace. I find old friendships fall away. Those were ones I was wearing a mask. People are drawn to peace, like attracts like. Like attracts like. We vibrate at a frequency of peace, we will draw new people into our circle. This is the law. That is why when someone asks Nisargadatta Maharaj, is there any benefit at all in being physically close to a sage? His answer was, the trees near the sandalwood tree in a forest start emitting the same fragrance. So we start living a life of peace and we start allowing others their lives of peace. We really don't want to be a disturbance to them. I had once an income tax officer who called me to his office, and I have not had a good experience in my past working years, so I asked the chartered accountant to go and see, is there some problem with our books, our entries? He said, no, I just want to meet him. And I felt I didn't have it in me to go there. He said, all right, I'll come to the office. And he came and he just thanked me for publishing the books we do, which are on the subject of spirituality. And I was pleasantly surprised. But one thing struck me. He said he had a terminal illness. And he said it took that terminal illness for him to realize one thing. He said, I want whoever is in touch with me, I want to disturb them the least. I just want to be a comma in the sentence. I wish people well. I wish nobody harm. I have been taught a great lesson with the illness, and I truly wish peace and harmony upon everyone. That I have learned through this lesson. When we stop seeing through the eyes of duality, the physical eyes, and we see through the eye of wisdom, knowing that the eyes of duality see duality, the single eye, the third eye, the eye of Shiva, is seeing singularity, which is not two, not two. It is nothing esoteric. It's no esoteric experience that light is going to pour forth from here. That may happen, but this is the light of divine wisdom. The simple seeing things for the way they are designed. This is the Indian deity Ganpati with a long trunk. This is the third eye. The round belly is the belly of relationships, Manipur Chakra. When both are aligned through the open eye of wisdom, the single eye, my relationships are in harmony. Big ears, listening rather than speaking too much. One tusk broken, not two. What could be called a non-dual awareness in daily living. This is our birthright. This is our gift. And this is a gift to bestow. To rise above the pairs of opposites. So that is all I have to offer for today, that no books, no theory, no philosophy is going to teach you lessons deeper than your own daily living. And I really wish a life of awareness, moment by moment, supreme awareness. Because it is certain to deliver peace and harmony in daily living. That is my only wish and prayer for everyone. I remember, lastly, my teacher had a migraine for 30 years. He suffered for 30 years, no medication helped him. And one day he woke up and it was gone, never to come back. And he said, that day I had the deepest realization that the absence of pain is the greatest pleasure. That day, running after pleasure stopped. Absence of pain is the greatest pleasure. And this teaching takes away psychological pain. Physical pain we have to endure. What we are bound to by the laws of karma, that what comes unasked to us. Psychological pain and suffering, our own and what we inflict on others. That, with right understanding and a right attitude, can be done away with. And to end on the concept of non-doership, it is put so well by Gorakhnath, the avatar of Shiva, the founder of the Nath Sampradaya. Sahaj mila so dood barabar, mang liya so pani. Khinch liya so rakt barabar, Gorakh bole bani. Sahaj mila so dood barabar. What comes unasked is what is meant for you. It is like getting milk. That unasked could be pleasure or pain. Sahaj mila so dood barabar, mang liya so pani. When you ask, you get water. Why? The ego has stepped in. I want. It is our own experience. We may want a certain relationship and it goes haywire. So it is not like milk. When the universe gives you unasked milk, when you ask, the first step of doership, it's like water. Khinch liya so rakt barabar. When you snatch or take what belongs to others, it is like getting blood. And mind you, it is not referring only to taking other people's money or objects. You may be snatching someone's peace of mind. Does it belong to you? Their peace of mind, does it belong to you? By that measure, we all have blood on our hands. Khinch liya so rakt barabar, Gorakh bole bani. Thus speaks Gorakhnath. The entire teaching of non-duality in this one verse, simplified. Someone asked Nisargadatta Maharaj, you use big words, abide in your being, abide in the self, I am that, I'm a simple person. Talk to me. He said, all right, all I ask for you is don't hate anyone. said, really? Is it that simple? He said, yes. Because then you will understand, if there is no one to hate, it means consciousness is all there is. Can consciousness hate itself? If you truly understood that consciousness is all there ever is, can consciousness hate itself? This understanding is true love, because the nature of consciousness is love. The nature of consciousness is love. Thank you. Thank you, Luca, for organizing this and for the invitation.
Okay. Very fun. I can give you the shame perspective. There are instances in our family, in our friendship, in our relationship. Oh, you want me to speak into this?
Yeah.
Okay. So there are instances in our, with our friends, with our family, with our relationships, where they might be imposing something on us, as in me, the individual. Or the flip side of it being, there might be instances where I want something from someone, but, you know, the kind of adamant. So that's the one part of the question. The other part is, this level of understanding requires the other party to also share this level of thought, doesn't it?
Not really.
Not okay.
No, because you see, what has happened is, if the person in front of you does not have the understanding, you just need the understanding that the person is not the doer. What happens with that is the sting of individual doership is pulled out, and you find the language you use and the things you say change. You are no longer battling with an individual, though it appears that way. You will still have to take a course of action. But you find it's quite different now. The whole dimension is very different. And that is why one gets to be more and more peaceful in spite of what arises in life. You see, if two people are playing a tennis match, action and reaction, that's the tennis match, it only needs one to put the racket down. That one who puts the racket down is the one with the understanding. Or you perpetuate the action-reaction loop, which we call the law of karma. Action-reaction, action-reaction. Now imagine taking this till the end of one's life. That means we are locked into this loop.
Just to complete the understanding, this is wonderful. What if the person is imposing something on, you know, me, the individual?
Yeah, so once the understanding is clear, you cannot, but once you are clear what's exactly happening, that this person is playing out their script, you have to still decide, do I keep answering back, do I step away? That is your decision. But while you make that decision, the understanding is, everything is the way it is meant to be and nobody is the doer of their actions. For example, let's say at work, there is a manager and there is a staff member. The staff member is not performing according to what the manager thinks the performance should be. Now, at the level of the individual, there's blame, there's saying that you're not performing well, you are not doing this, you don't have the skills, and a lot of condemnation, finger pointing. A manager with understanding will realize all I can do is encourage this person, talk to him, but maybe his capacity and skill sets are limited. So that manager with understanding is not fighting at the level of an individual doing something. The awareness is that he's given an opportunity, I can remind him, but I know perhaps it is not his destiny to perform the way I expect him to perform. When the sting of personal doership is pulled out from this relationship, it becomes very objective. Then the manager still has to decide, do I tell this person to stay or do I tell this person to leave? But there is no animosity, there is no hatred, there is no blame. That is how the man of understanding lives his life. That is what happens. Okay. Thank you.